FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's February 20th, 2018. Hey, be part of the show. Just send an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. Any of your concerns or feedback, we answer everything, I promise. So, well, we're seeing the market. It hit a peak. It pulled back in dramatic fashion. And, well, I guess that was last week. It pulled back in dramatic fashion. Now, we're seeing it recovering some. It's at 25,000 and change right at this particular moment. And, well, what is going to happen next with the stock market? Volatility index, the VIX, is way up. Hey, and what about Bitcoin? It corrected with the stock market. It's recovered some. It's right in the mid 11,000s right now. I hesitate to give you an exact reading on Bitcoin because it changes from moment to moment. So it's kind of better to give you a range. Well, you know, a lot is going on there. Well, I say that a lot too, don't I? But Jeff Schulte is with us now, founding partner at First Capital Advisors Group. Jeff, you've been at this investment business for a long time. I mean, over 30 years, and you know, I'm sure you got some amazing war stories. But what about today? Here, is this like any other market you've ever seen, or are we looking at uncharted waters?
Good afternoon, Kerry. Thank you for having me, first of all. All you need is tomorrow's newspaper to have all the answers. Unfortunately, I don't, and nobody else does either. Yes, I've been doing this for 34 years, going on 35 years. So I have a lot of experience in what's going on. And what your question is, we're in a normal cycle back and forth that happens throughout history in the stock market. There's nothing abnormal about it other than we're living through it. And we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring one way or the other. But we've been in a low volatility, to use your stat, before, for many years. And that's caused tranquility in the marketplace. So it's gone up. The Fed's been accommodating. So for a number of years, that's led the market to go up. The election last year caused some business euphoria with lower taxes and regulation. And the market really took off. And now there's been a sea change, and that sea change is the upside to a growing and booming almost economy by a lot of measures is inflation. Inflation has been subdued, as you know, under 2% mandate the Fed has for a number of years. And if inflation gets too high, that will not be good for the stock market. People, I think, overreacted here in late January, early February, that, oh my gosh, wages are up, inflation's up, it's coming, it's here, we better get out. And like the market always is ahead of itself, so it backed off. And then emotion comes back, or goes out, actually, and people say, well, yeah, inflation's up a little bit, wages are up a little bit, but they're still historically low. Maybe it's a little premature to not trust the market and the economy is doing well. So people came back, at least halfway back, so to speak, into the market. And it's trying to get its footing now with this sea change that occurred. Are we going to have higher inflation and interest rates? And what's the Fed going to do the rest of the year? And until that gets a little bit more clarity, we're going to be in a choppy market.
It's going to be choppy. So that's like a sawtooth market. You're going up, going down. Yeah, range bound, right? It's going to be in a range, probably. We're not making.
I don't know about that. It's always data dependent, Kerry. What, you know, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and when that data comes out, it may shoot the market way up. It may shoot it way down, just depending on what that is. So I wouldn't necessarily call it range bound, but I think there, most of the pundits out there think it has an upward incline or upward tilt over the next 12 months or at least 6 months.
Well, from a valuation standpoint, Jeff, on many levels, it could be argued that this market really is overvalued. PE ratios, price to dividend yield, all these things. It's really trading at levels not seen before, at least a lot of stocks are. And you wonder how much upside potential can there be? Plus, we add in the fact that we've had a 9-year bull market, raging bull market, a dollar invested in 2009 at the bottom, with dividends reinvested as well, is worth $4 now. So that's a stellar return. Can we really, how much realistically can we expect it to add to an already impressive record?
Well, PEs were historically high prior to the end of January when the market had a pullback. That pullback has actually brought valuations and PE ratios fairly close to their long-term average, maybe slightly above. And again, based on data that we don't have yet, earnings are doing well at all the companies. So if we're at a PE of, say, 16 plus right now, based on earnings of, call it $100 just for simplicity, by any XYZ company, and that company actually turns in $120 of earnings, then 16 times their stock is low. It'll adjust for that. So we have to wait and see how the economy plays out and what the earnings season is going to do. But really, that's why the market was chugging higher through the fall and in January, was anticipation of companies turning it around, growing, building a factory that they hadn't built before, expanding their workforce, more full-time employees, and that would drive earnings up and it would catch up to the PE, which was ahead of itself, which is typical of the market. So it just depends on what we see with the economy and things playing out. But as I said earlier, the reports are, by all measures, in all levels of the economy, that things are pretty robust and doing pretty well. And so I would anticipate stocks to continue to climb and catch the future earnings that will be coming out.
Right. So when you look at employment or unemployment approaching all-time lows, isn't that a sign that things are getting heated up and that we're getting close to a peak in the economy and therefore probably a peak in the market as well?
Could be, but it doesn't necessarily foretell that. It just depends on what happens with productivity. For example, if the full-time employees get more productive, technology enters, you could do more per person that you've hired, then no, not necessarily doesn't foretell that the market will go down. There's other factors that surround it. However, traditionally, full employment, good economy, you're going to have inflation creep up. And when you have inflation creep up, eventually there's a crossover where that's negative for the market and it will pull back. But we're far from that right now.
Okay. And what about interest rates? They have been creeping up. The 10-year, you know, it's higher than it's been for quite a while.
Yes, that is true. And we are assuming that interest rates will continue to climb for the foreseeable future. The Fed, my investment team, is forecasting 4 rate increases this year. The market was at 3 on average, and they're starting to lean a little bit towards the 4 now with the good economic numbers that they're seeing, which will push interest rates higher. And certainly that's deleterious for bonds and interest-sensitive issues, but it's positive for other interest-sensitive issues like banks, because banks lend at a lower number and lend at a higher number and pay deposits at a lower number. So the bigger that spread can get is good for some financial companies. It just depends on things. But yes, I would anticipate rates rising over the foreseeable future.
I mean, we're seeing it. It's at 2.9 right now and change, the 10-year. And what effect does that have on housing? Because when, you know, traditional wisdom was, well, I can't call it traditional, but the last cycle was whenever it went above 5%, that was really, I'm talking 30-year mortgage, fixed mortgage rate over 5%. That was a real bummer, a negative for housing, for home builders, et cetera. So, you know, you have to wonder if these rates keep going, if they go up another 100 basis points or 75, we're going to be looking at 5% to 30-year rate, fixed rate on mortgages.
FSN Radio.
Okay, we have a new sponsor, and you know how I love podcasts. This is a podcast you definitely want to check out.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Looking to build your wealth? Concerned about your retirement? Market volatility? Inflation? Then Wealth Talks is for you. Wealth Talks is an independent educational podcast that helps you build wealth in all areas of your life. And you know how I love podcasts. Increase your financial IQ while getting exposed to strategies that the wealthy use to get and stay wealthy. You'll get actionable intelligence that you can put to use immediately. Wealth Talks is way beyond money because there's so much more to wealth than just dollars, euros, or yuans. Listen to Wealth Talks Radio every Wednesday. Your host, Dr. Tom McPhee, is a private wealth counselor and author of multiple books. His ready-to-go process will get you started with the information you need to create and to sustain wealth. He'll inspire you to take control of your finances and create wealth that you can pass on from generation to generation. Aren't you tired of people who talk the talk but can't walk the walk? Don't waste any more time. Start your wealth building journey now with Wealth Talks Podcast. Go to our site, www.life-benefits.com, or just Google Wealth Talks Podcast and start learning today.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yes, that's probably going to happen. They're in the foursome range right now, and rates really haven't begun to rise that rapidly. I'm not an expert on mortgages, but I believe traditionally 6% is kind of an average mortgage rate going back in history. And so even at 5%, we're still underneath that. But again, the theme that I'm trying to suggest is it depends on other factors. Right. If you're making a lot more money, then you can afford a higher mortgage and get that big house that you do want, or the second home that you do want. So everything is related, but the nature of your question is, at some point, there is a cause and effect to anything that's happening. Yes, if rates go too high, it'll be a negative for the housing market. But again, other factors would come into play.
Yeah. Hey, and just before we start talking about the cryptocurrency space, your impressions of the tax deal, a net positive overall?
Anytime you can lower the cost of using your money is good for the economy. And so lower tax rates, whether they're manifested in individual rates, corporate rates, anytime you can lower the cost of capital through the speed bumps of taxes is positive for the economy.
You said that so simply and eloquently, Jeff. I mean, what is with the Congress critters there who, you know, party will go nameless, saying this is Armageddon, it's going to destroy the country? And, you know, almost immediately we saw large multinational corporations and domestic corporations giving back a substantial part of their tax savings, spreading the wealth, if you will, with their employees. Now, granted, the heads of these companies, you know, they're still doing their stock buybacks and all that, but the proportionally, the employees in the middle class there really did get a nice bump from this tax bill, didn't they?
No question about it. But when you add politics to the economic mix, which is becoming a larger and larger variable in what we have to measure and try and effectuate into our portfolios, is becoming more challenging because politicians are out for votes, they're not out for logic, and they're not out necessarily for business. So what I said, with you lower regulations and you lower taxes, it's going to be positive for capital, whether it's deployed back into building another factory, hiring more employees, or giving employees higher wages, is all a positive for the U.S. The politicians want to get reelected, so they have different reactions to that.
Hey, that's all that matters to them, is they live from election to election and fundraiser to fundraiser. But, you know, I'm reminded by Mark Twain's old famous quote, you can fool some of the people all of the time, all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all the time. You think people are waking up to the fact that, hey, you know, I'm actually making more money. My company just gave me $1,000 crumb. Maybe this isn't so bad here for me.
Well, of course. I mean, more is better, as someone once said. I don't know if it was Mark Twain, but
or Monty
more is
Python.
Better, and that's simplistically beautiful.
Yeah, and so even though, you know, you get your paycheck every couple of weeks, however it is, you know, they used to give it to you every Friday, and then they've been working on fixing it ever since. Every Friday was nice, but that way you couldn't blow all the money before the weekend. But point being, you get it. And there's only one number that Joe Sixpack looks at, and that's the net amount that's on the check that, you know, gets deposited into the account. They don't really care about any of the other stuff. It's like, hey, you might care about it, but you know there's nothing you can do, so why waste your breath?
That's one of the political geniuses of our time, that they were able to do withholding at the business level. We pay our taxes as entrepreneurs on a quarterly basis. And if you have to shell out your own money out of your own pocket, it has a different effect on your mindset of how you look at the political system.
Yeah, we can thank Milton Friedman for that. That happened during World War II. That was his brainchild. Look, it's just like with unions. When unions have to rely upon employees just voluntarily sending their dues, you know, signing on the dotted line, even if it's auto pay, auto deduct, if they have to consent to it, these unions are become much less popular. All of a sudden, they lose membership and their viability potentially threatened. You know, what would happen if the government said, you know, this really is a voluntary tax system and just send us the money, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think the Supreme Court took up one of those union causes of not being forced to
correct.
Don't want to pay the dues. And that's pending as we speak.
Yeah.
But there would be great political upheaval if they had to come knock on my door and collect the tax. I'd be guarding my door pretty closely, I think.
Yeah, that shotgun would be within arm's reach.
Yeah. And you're right.
Yes.
And that's unfortunate because our deficits are at trillions and trillions of dollars. And so all of that has to be paid back eventually. And we just kick the can down the road, as they like to say. And it's our grandkids that they're putting that price tag on.
Yeah, well, that can's getting pretty beat up and it's not rolling very well. And interest rates just might be. So let's talk real quickly about cryptocurrencies, your view on them and your view of their future.
Well, it's too new to really say what the future will hold for it. And therefore, I would be very reticent to invest in it or use it because it's a new technology, essentially. And it's just a giant math problem and doesn't have a value except for how much Kerry says it's worth to him and Jeff might say it's worth to him. So it's not really a currency. It's a trade or barter system right now. It has some pundits. It has some people that like it. The new technology's blockchain is very interesting. I'm seeing stories come out about corporation using it to manage inventory and some of their processes, not just for coins. So we'll see how that technology plays itself out. But you don't want to get ahead of technology too much. You remember the 90s and where the PEs were, to come back to that story, and what the stock market was doing with the new internet that was out there and all this hot web stuff that was out there. And how did that end?
Yeah. The dot-bomb era. Yes. Only too well. You know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but $1 invested in the stock market in 2009, like we discussed, is worth $4 now. $1 invested in Bitcoin is worth millions. Now, I'm not saying go out and buy it, but it seems like there's more to the whole cryptocurrency space than meets the eye. I agree with you. You don't want to be on the bleeding edge of technology. You want others to shed the blood. So when you get into it, it's stable and safe. But, you know, because you can lose blood in it, to carry the metaphor a little too much, that ensures the risks are high. Potential rewards are also high.
Always the case. I just would be reticent to do anything with it right now. I'm not an expert on it by any means, but I've read things like it could crash any day. It may not be Bitcoin specifically, may not be the cryptocurrency of the future. It could be a different application. And if that happens overnight and it's a better one and everybody flips to the better one, that's the problem when you have that kind of a risk element out there, that it's not Coca-Cola that it's been around 60 or 70 or 80 years. It's not tried and true yet. And therefore the risks are enormous. We tend not to try and steer towards those kinds of risks. We can't measure them very closely, and that scares us off.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But people are going, well, you have to realize you're not investing when you buy cryptocurrencies. You're speculating. And what separates a speculator from a gambler? Well, the speculator believes or is acting upon information that he believes or she believes to be significant and perhaps not generally understood by the public at large. And the gambler just says, well, I know the house has got the advantage, but maybe I'll get lucky this time. Is there a place for reasoned speculation in this sector?
I wouldn't be a proponent of that. I like your description of a gambler versus a speculator. It goes back to my comment. A gambler can measure odds. He knows what it is for a blackjack game or a poker game. He knows how many aces are held in the deck, so to speak. It's not controllable, but he has some feel for the risks that he's undertaking, or she. That's my advice about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. We don't know how many aces are in the deck or not in the deck, and what it's going to bring tomorrow. There's just too many unknowns, and we try not to speculate in those areas.
And, you know, there is a lot of manipulation going on. I know it for a fact without getting into the details. A lot of pump and dumps, and really the markets are very shallow. You know, Bitcoin at one point was up to 400 plus thousand transactions a day. It's now under 200,000 transactions per day, and it's trading for, well, 40% less than it was just a couple of months ago. So, you know, not for the faint of heart. And while there could be great returns, you know, you shouldn't be risking a substantial portion of your assets there. Hey, one final question, Jeff. If we're in a market that is fairly valued, do you just stay the course, or should you be looking at reducing your positions? How do you protect yourself from a potential decline? You know, a bone, earth-shattering, bone, you know, raising decline. What's your advice on that?
Well, I've done some studies of the market over the last 20 or 25 years. And basically, if you have a five-year time frame or more, you have a 75% chance of having more money at the end of 5 years than you started with. So I advise clients that if you have a time frame of 5 years or longer, you should be in the market if the data out there currently is positive for the economy. And it is. So going back to my theory, 75% chance of having more money after 5 years if you can be patient. And yes, it'll go up and down in that five-year period. But again, the odds, going back to our discussion about gambling, the odds are in your favor, 75%, that you'll have more money at that point. If your time frame is less than 5 years, then you should be very cautious about the stock market and what's going on right now, and maybe not participating in it. For example, if you have a plan to get married and buy a house in the next 5 years, that down payment is probably put to use in a better format than the markets.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense. And I can see, especially if you've made a lot of profits, though, if you were one of those smart people that put the dollar in 09, and now it's worth four, you just let it ride? Or do you take a portion of it? You know, like the old idiotic saying, you know, pigs get slaughtered. Are you being a pig expecting to make more than quadruple your money in the past 9 years?
No, I wouldn't look at it that way. If the market's been healthy and done a good return for you, I don't know why I wouldn't expect that to continue as long as the politics and the economics that I see in front of me remain on a positive footing, which I've alluded to throughout this discussion. So I'm pretty positive about the market. I would maybe put more money in on pullbacks during this volatility and take some advantage of that. But again, it depends on what your long-term view is. If you're going to be retiring in a couple of years, buying a house, as I mentioned, or you've got, you know, a 20-year run before you really need to use your investments to support you in retirement, then I would let it to continue to run at this particular point in time. Because there's a saying out there as well, it's hard to be smart twice. And that means, okay, you take your money out today because you think the market's going down and it's gone straight up and I've made my $4 for the dollar. That's one thing, and you could be correct on that analysis, but when do you get back in? And those are difficult decisions to make, and there's tons and tons of statistics out there that show that those people that try and get in and try and get out and get nervous about these things are poorly served over the long haul. So people that stay in the market and don't pull in and out and follow the advice I just offered about the 5 or 10 year time frame you might have, they are the ones rewarded, even if the market gets choppy in the short term.
Yeah, and then there's always the thing, if you're working and you got a good income, you have disposable dollars, if you will, then putting in more money, you keep reinvesting. I mean, that's reasonable, right?
Yes. If you have a steady job and steady income and you have extra money, as I like to say, then yes, I would continue to grow my nest egg. And the best place to do that at the moment is the market. It's not in the bond market, that's for sure. There's some alternatives you could consider. There's certainly real estate and other things like that. But I would continue to build and grow my nest egg through additional savings for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. And well, I could talk to you all day about this. It's fascinating and I like your perspective, but unfortunately we got to go. Just tell us where we find you, how we connect with you on the web and all that good stuff.
Well, my firm is First Capital Advisors Group. You can find my information at that website, firstcapadv.com. And look us up. Give us a call. We'll be happy to help.
All right. Hey, it's been a pleasure. And look, if you've got any questions for Jeff, myself, just shoot us an email, kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again.
Look forward to it. You have a great afternoon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.